Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome back to Upfront. I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
Club football is back and it's business time in the FA Cup, people. We react to Villa's dramatic penalty shootout as well as Chelsea's latest win over Arsenal ahead of the Conti Cup final this weekend. Plus, why has France's captain decided not to play at the World Cup? And then we head north because today we're joined by a special guest from north of the border. You'll struggle to find many people who have given more service to a single football club than Laura Montgomery. Not only did she play for Glasgow City over 250 times and captained them from 1998 to 2010, but she also co-founded the club. Just a small couple of things there. Ever since then, the club has been a huge player in Scottish football. We speak to Laura about a seismic season for the Scottish Women's Premier League, the strengths of being a women's only football club, and the future of the Scottish game. All right, Rach. I mean, big FA Cup weekend, fifth round. I mean, we've got to have a shout out first off to our friend of the pod, Maggie Murphy and Lewis, who reached the quarterfinals for the very first time in their history.
Yes.
I mean, they beat Cardiff City a solid 6-0 at
Dominant.
Home.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty impressive display. They were probably expected to win that game, but first time in the club's history. I mean, what an achievement for them.
So exciting. And they've drawn Manchester United at home in the quarterfinals, which is, you know, I think tie of the tournament. I'm really excited for that one. Can't wait for that. So yeah, I'm excited for them. I think that could be a really, really big fixture.
I mean, I kind of want to go and see it myself. And then I don't know who to root, because obviously, you know, I have, you know, strong, passionate feelings for Man United.
Yes.
But also, like, Lewis is the underdog in
that
game.
Yeah.
I mean, the crowd they're going to get down there. I mean, they already had a pretty amazing fan base. So I expect there's going to be quite a lot of people going down to the Dripping Pan that weekend.
Yeah, and add the Man United fans in, it's going to be a noisy one.
Oh, gosh. gosh, I want to be there, but I've got a Palace game. We've got to touch on as well the big, big beast, the battle of the Titans, the big giants, Chelsea and Arsenal meeting again. Chelsea got the better of Arsenal this weekend. Third straight elimination at the hands of Emma Hayes' side. Big, big weekend for Sam Kerr. She had her 100th game this weekend, 100th appearance for Chelsea and 82nd goal.
I tell you what, the amount of numbers that have been floating around about that, okay, because it was 78 was said by the club. Everyone else was saying 82.
I saw 81 as well.
Now the club is saying 81.
Yeah.
So listen, she scored a hell of a lot of goals in 100 games. I still think it's 82, but you know what? We'd all have to go back and start counting, I think. But yeah, amazing. And Sophie was telling me the fans were singing, even with jet lag, she's better than you, which I think is just such a... she enjoyed it as well. It's a great clip of her turning around and giving the fans a little applause. So that's what a hell of a chant. But yeah, she's almost better with jet lag.
I think it was that. I don't think a lot of people were expecting her to start, considering she just played 3 matches for Australia in her home nation over the international break. Most recently she just played on Wednesday, and then to come in and to have a performance like that was absolutely phenomenal. Stats wise, talking about Chelsea and their sort of dominance there, I don't want to talk too much about the mentality monster. I'll let you comment on what Emma Hayes said post-match, but 57% possession with Arsenal, 20 shots as opposed to 7 Chelsea, and 11 shots on target for Arsenal as opposed to Chelsea's 3. To me, Arsenal had a more dominant performance in terms of the stats, but what we actually saw was Arsenal again not putting away key and critical chances, and Chelsea being the more efficient, ruthless side. What were your thoughts on that? What did you take away?
And I think, if I'm right, Ann-Kathrine Berger was player of the match?
Yes, she
so
was.
So that kind of tells you everything. It's frustrating because Arsenal know what the problems are. There's a lot of pressure there on them to start scoring goals, and they just keep kind of heaping pressure on themselves. And, we talk a lot about who they're missing up front, but that's massively impacted. The defence is shaky, and, we kind of forget that not the lack of firepower, but the lack of clinical finish puts more pressure on the defence, because they know that, in the past, maybe it was like, okay, we always know we've got someone to get us out of this if needed. Not that that was always the case, but it just, you think about the pressure that filters down. As each chance goes by, the more and more pressure on the defence. Do not let Chelsea score. Do not let Chelsea score, because we're not putting our chances away. We need to hold off a bit longer. And yeah, they're a bit shaky at the back, which is a bit worrying. And I just think there's no, it's like they're starting again to try and find those connections and those relationships with those two key players missing. And it's just taking a while. And I guess Arsenal fans will be frustrated. I think Jonas will be looking at all the chances they created and all the shots they had, and that's what he'll be focusing on. One or two of those had actually gone in, be a whole different ballgame. So they're going to focus on that ahead of the Conti Cup final this weekend.
Massively. Idival did say, we created enough chances to win the game, but Chelsea were brutally efficient. And he said, actually, on a positive note, it's easier to keep the belief that things will improve. There are players there that I know can score goals. But I think now, like you said, they've got to problem solve their way out of this. They haven't got the firepower up front, but you need to be looking at a more robust defence, because that's not okay. Their performance Sunday wasn't okay.
Yeah. I know we say lack of firepower, but they have players in the team that can score goals. So it does feel like they're still lacking those relationships and those combinations. They're still trying to figure those out now. And I think that is impacting the defence, as I said. But I think mentality was the big player in this. I know I talk about this all the time.
You never do. I never hear that from you.
But if we think about Chelsea in the beginning of the season, they weren't creating enough chances. They weren't creating enough chances on goal, and they weren't converting enough. Now, what did you say? 3 shots on target?
Yeah.
2 goals?
Yep.
That's the shift. And Hayes spoke about that post-match, that this was a hard game for both teams right after international break. You've a lot of international players in both of these teams. To get yourself up for a game like this, to have your head in the game like this, is going to be even tougher. And that's what was going to be the decider between the two teams. And Chelsea just have that.
Yeah, Hayes said again, technical errors there. Tactically, she felt they did everything they asked. They did have heavy legs, brains are tired, but the commitment to staying in the game was key there, and taking chance at the right moment, exactly what you said. It was a bit of a resilient performance. It wasn't Chelsea's best. It wasn't a sort of masterclass in, beating another Titan, but it was enough to get them through to the next round. So, yeah, and again, we're going to have a kind of It's almost like another opportunity to see both of them go head to head at Selly P at the Conti Cup final next weekend, which would be another kind of chance for maybe Arsenal to, you know, focus on this game and think we can actually get some silverware this season. Because at the moment, that does look a little bit on the ropes.
I'd really, really like them to get silverware this season because this is going to be probably one of their toughest seasons mentally and physically. And I kind of, it's one of those, like, either Jonas is going to pull out some tactical masterclass and have learned a lot of lessons from this match, and it could be really beneficial that they just played them, or it's going to go the other way and they're going to get battered.
Oh, all right, score predictions.
I think Chelsea 3-1.
3-1. I say Chelsea 2-0.
Head says Chelsea, heart says Arsenal. You know, I want them to get something this season just to kind of take the pressure off.
I think it's a game that carries more pressure than it normally would. I think a lot of the games that, you know, Arsenal and Chelsea are going to be playing, they're not going to be thinking, okay, the Conti Cup is our absolute ride or die. But for Arsenal, I feel like it is. Whereas for Chelsea, I think it would just be a bonus to win that.
I don't know. I feel like for Chelsea, that would just set them on their way for the rest of the season. And they'd be like, do you know what? Let's get this title. Let's get the league. Let's get the FA Cup. You know,
let's do it all.
It will light a fire that they need, I think. So I think for both of them, a lot rides in it.
Another big, big bit of news this weekend from the France women's national team. Wendy Reynard announced that she will not play at the 2023 World Cup to preserve her mental health. She said that she was taking a step back from the national team. She was fed up with a lack of professionalism. She was then joined by Diani and Katoto. They said they will no longer be playing for France unless things change. Diani in particular said the management of the team was behind the decision, and Reynard said she could no longer endorse the current system. So yeah, it does not look good. And I think we've obviously seen a bit of a wave of, you know, incredible national teams, you know, raise these kind of massive significant issues with the way that the women's teams are being treated, the equality, the discrimination, the harassment, you know, the really in-depth kind of issues, you know, that some of the US and the Spanish players are talking about. What is happening? What is going on, Rage? Because this to me feels like a huge problem that we've got these massive national teams. We've got Olympians. We've got, you know, World Cup holders. We've got semi-finalists in the Euros from last year coming out and saying, well, actually, our federations aren't supporting us. And even worse, I think, is that some of these federations are turning around and saying, actually, you're just individuals and the team is so much bigger and the federation is so much bigger than you. We're not really going to look into this or take this that seriously. I mean, what the hell is going on?
Well, first of all, I want to say hats off to players like Reynard and Diani and Katoto. But Reynard, it could potentially be her last World Cup.
Mm.
And the strength and the bravery to put that in jeopardy and to potentially put that on hold for a bigger cause is so, so brave. And we're seeing that from a lot of different players. They're, if anything, putting the team ahead of themselves.
Yeah.
And they want better conditions, rightly so. And this kind of equality isn't just about money, right? It's about facilities, accessibility, the equipment needed to be and to perform at your best. And what we're seeing is that women's football still has a long way to go, because if this is happening for these big name teams, you know, there's a lot of teams that aren't up in the top 10 in the world that are struggling and fighting these fights. So we still have a long way to go in that respect. I think the issues are slightly different with Canada, with France, and maybe with Spain, you know, slightly different, but all kind of encompasses that we need better conditions for national teams. And these, as you say, are the best of the best. With France, you know, there's no kind of denying the fact that there's been problems with Corinne Diacre, the coach. We touched on them before the Euros. She has 9 lives, it seems. There's been a lot of
more than that.
Yeah, 12. There's a lot of things that have come out about her. She's a very, very severe way of managing. And I think, you know, I read that she had managed a men's team at one point in France. And after she left, some players described it as almost like a dictatorship. It was her way or the highway. And I think that's kind of the case at the moment. If you're not 100% on board with absolutely everything, you get dropped. And we saw that with Amandine Henry. Previous captain was dropped. Wendy Renard was dropped in 2017 and brought back as captain. So they're pushing for change. I do feel like with Spain and France, there's an element of kind of cronyism in there in terms of management staying in place for longer than maybe they should. And France Federation's response feels a little bit like the Spanish Federation's response in this kind of players are not bigger than a federation. But, you know, more power to them, because they're fighting the good fight, and it takes big names like this and big players like this and big risks like this, unfortunately, for change to be made.
Massively. And I think, yeah, like you said, I've got to echo your sentiments there, Rach. I mean, we've only just seen, you know, Ada Heidelberg, Lyon teammate of Reynard, who previously obviously stopped playing for Norway for 5 years, taking a stand against the inequalities that were happening in the national team there. And I think we are starting to see a lot more of that. It's like players using their platforms, and not just in a kind of sentimental way in terms of, you know, putting up a rainbow picture for Pride or anything like that. These are big, significant changes that are going to impact their career. I mean, like you said, I mean, Reynard's probably not going to go to another World Cup in her lifetime. So, you know, things are going to be really bloody bad for you to take a step away from the game. But, you know, credit to them for trying to highlight what's going on to try and help things for hopefully the next generation of players coming through. But I'm a little bit worried by the French response to this, because that to me sounds like a shutdown. We're not going to investigate it properly. We don't think there's an issue here, and we're going to see how much it impacts you at the World Cup, and we're not that fussed about it anyway. So yeah, I mean, these are three massive players. It's obviously going to affect their chances at the World Cup this year. So, you know, credit to them for taking that stance, and that's unreal. So yeah, we'll bring you more updates on the story, because I'm assuming there'll be probably some more information coming out. We're already sort of seeing potentially some rumours circulating about Karim being fired or resigning from the post, and also there's some allegations being made potentially about the chief of the French Federation. But we'll wait and see what sort of comes out and what information we have.
Bon chance to later the French on. Team.
Yeah. All right, we're going to have a break, and then after this, we will speak to Laura. Welcome to Upfront, Laura. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Wish you could have had you here, but obviously you're an incredibly busy person. I mean, to give our listeners a bit of background, yourself and Caroline Stewart founded Glasgow City in 1998. Not a small thing to do, just found a club. And ever since, you've led the way in the Scottish game and dominated. After an incredible 14 straight Scottish Women's Premier League titles, Glasgow City's run finally ended last year when Rangers lifted the trophy. But this season, you are back in a fierce title race with Celtic and Rangers. And last weekend, you returned to the top of the table, of course, with a 7-0 win over Aberdeen. Wow. I mean, what a
history.
What a career. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us. We feel very privileged to have you on. I mean, we've got to sort of jump straight in and talk a little bit about this season. I mean, Glasgow City not defending the title for the first time in 15 years. Has that been a sort of little bit of a liberating thing for you, I suppose, the pressure sort of being a little bit less?
Yeah, I think it's just the nature of the game. I think it was an incredible achievement. You know, as the years went past, I kind of thought, let's focus on 10, because that's a Scottish record. And then every year I'm like, oh my God, we've got a chance of doing this again. So, you know, it was obviously a real motivation, but, you know, we weren't daft. We knew it was not going to last for forever. It's, you know, it was extremely challenging. As anybody knows that, you know, that has success, the hardest thing is to retain it and to keep winning. It's easier to do it, and much easier to do it as a one-off. But, you know, last season for us was a bit of a transition in terms of, we had a new head coach. They weren't able to come in at the very start of the season, so we had an interim coach. We were changing a lot of our structures, going from kind of part-time team to moving to, you know, a full-time setup, and, you know, that all takes its time. But, you know, in terms of where that's put us now, you know, it's obviously in great shape. We're fully professional. You know, we've implemented a lot of things in the last year, and I think, you know, this season it's kind of starting to come to its fore. We've got our new kind of interim head coach, Leanne, Leanne Ross, that's doing, you know, incredibly well. You can see her form, you know, after Christmas, and she's come in. You know, she's got this very ruthless and relentless kind of streak about her, which kind of emphasised how she played herself and how almost we were as a team, and she's instilling that in the girls, and that probably, you know, emphasises the likes of the scoreline on Sunday. You know, when we get goals, you know, we don't sit back and say, right, you know, we've won the game. You know, we keep going, and no matter who comes onto the pitch, you know, as a substitute, the quality doesn't drop, and that kind of maintenance of what we're trying to do in the match continues.
You obviously led the way in women's football in Scotland for a very long time. But seeing teams now start to challenge, and obviously now you're back, you're fighting to get back and win it again. Does it kind of feel like, oh, it's about time now? You've got this kind of real fight in your hands?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think everyone thinks that we've kind of had it easy over all these years, and, you know, we've really, really not. You know, we've had huge competition over a number of years. Obviously, in recent times, it's been Hibernian, but, you know, I remember back for a period it was Celtic for a year or two where, you know, we're pushing us. I think they'd finish runners-up. It was Spartans 1 year. So we've always had incredibly tough competition. You know, the leagues, you know, we've never won them by 20 points or anything like that. It's always been really, really tight. I think, you know, the investment in Rangers and Celtic have been around for a long time. I think what a lot of people don't also realise is they've always had more money than us. You know, they've always had big shiny training centres and a lot of resources they could put into their team, which we never had, but, you know, we were still able to maintain our success. Now, obviously, that investment from these clubs is massive, but as it is from Hibernian and Harps and lots of our other teams, you know, within the league. But it's fantastic because I think, you know, in Scotland, you know, we've kind of looked on with envy over, you know, some of the other leagues in the world, you know, the investment there, the opportunities for girls to play full time. And, you know, I didn't want Scotland, and I don't want our club to be one where, you know, players just constantly want to move on, when it's very hard to attract players to come and play in your country. You know, we want to, if we get to Europe, to be competitive, and all of that means we have to have a strong league. So 100% welcome, you know, the growth in a number of teams in the SWPL.
And I think I'm right in saying, I read a quote from you that you said you want to be successful and win titles, of course, but that's not the only measure. That you do a lot of, obviously, we do a lot off field to champion change, and there's a real cause behind us, which, you know, is an amazing thing, especially as an independent club, about the wider impact you've had.
Yeah, and that's why we are independent. You know, I've never hidden the fact that most of the major men's teams over all the revolution have asked us to be their team over the year, because that was a nice tick box. Like, let's pick the team that's winning and rebrand them as ours. But, you know, the reason that, you know, we didn't do that, and the reason it was never for us, is because, for me, you know, equality is massive and the girls and women have to be equal. And there's very few setups in the world where that does exist. And I think I want to be a club where, you know, I can go to meetings and I can make decisions. I don't have to take it back, and I don't need to think how it may impact on the men's side. We have incredibly strong beliefs and values in what we do. And that can be things from, you know, our players go out into schools all the time. You know, we very much instill that you can't be what you can't see. So, you know, we send the players out, we do role model stuff all over. It has a huge impact. You know, just last week, during the international break, I had a head teacher get in touch because, you know, we'd opened a school pitch the year before, and there's a young girl that had really got into football, but she was now getting bullied by the boys. So we invite her along to training for the day. She meets a player, she gets a strip. It's only one kid, but it'll make a big difference. It might make that little girl stick in at football, and it might mean that she has a healthy lifestyle for the rest of her life because she's, you know, she's stuck in at a sport. Or who knows, she could go on to be, you know, a fantastic player, but it doesn't really matter. We just kind of want opportunities to be available to girls, and also to campaign, you're right, you know, for change, things that haven't been right in the game. We've been at the forefront of the ones shouting about it and saying why it's not right and why things need to change. Or whether it's, for example, one of our current campaigns is to encourage women, you know, to go for smear tests, because, you know, there are huge issues with cervical cancer in our country. You know, a lot of women or people with a cervix scared to go and get a smear. So we joined that campaign to try and, you know, reduce those barriers, because our players are role models and people do listen to them.
Love that. Absolutely amazing. It's amazing always when clubs are sort of using their platforms kind of raise awareness, especially sort of some of the women's health issues. We definitely touched on a few of those in the pod recently. And if you ever want me and Rachel to come down to a training session, we'd absolutely love to. That'd be a great upfront up north. That'd be great.
Most welcome.
Oh, brilliant. All right. Well, Finn, producer Finn, if you can sort that out, that'd be absolutely great. But Laura, you mentioned there sort of being an independent club, and, you know, at the moment there are fewer and fewer independent clubs. Apart from Glasgow City's B team, there are no other independent clubs in the SWPL. You know, what are your thoughts on kind of independent clubs, you know, their place in the future of women's football? And do you kind of see it as a bit of a commercial advantage now, because, you know, that's quite a unique feature that you've got?
Yeah, I think it's two things. I think it's easier financially being part of a men's club because they naturally will have more money. Now, that easiness can exist on very different levels. So, for example, in the WSL, you know, the amount of money those clubs have in terms of, sorry, their men's clubs is, you know, it's frightening. So, you know, potentially, for example, Chelsea men to give Chelsea women £10 million isn't really that too, you know, is it too hard? There's no club in Scotland going to get £10 million off their men's side, you know, so the men's clubs here don't have that kind of same resource. And so, But it all comes into percentages, and it's all still, you know, good value for the women's teams. I think for us, I think it is hard to be an independent club because I see you don't have things kind of automatically given to you. But as you see, I think we kind of stand out now because we have kind of stuck to our guns for 25 years. We are different. We very much don't go down the traditional model of what football's always been or what it's like. So a typical example of that is we're a clean club. You know, not only do we not take alcohol at sponsors or gambling sponsors, we also partner with the organisations that try to remove this type of advertising from our sport. Now that, of course, has an impact on us financially, and we can be a bit of a lone voice because I go back to, for example, a lot of my peers in the women's game who their side, for example, is attached to a men's side, probably agree with me, but they can't make the same stance because their men's clubs have these brands all around their stadium and on their shirts. So that in itself and what we do and everything we do in our community, yeah, it does, it attracts investment and it attracts sponsors who perhaps like the fact that we are different and we stand for something different and we can kind of move quite nimbly in what we want to do.
That's so interesting. I think it's something we'll probably touch on as we get close to the World Cup as well, when we're seeing sponsors kind of come across both men's and women's football and how much control we still have in the women's game in terms of who sponsors women's football versus who sponsors men. You worked in Hibernian, right? So you've seen the other side. What learnings did you take from that?
Well, it was a very different setup because obviously I only worked on the men's side, you know, on the commercial side. And to be honest, it's, you know, men's football world is, let's grab money from wherever we can. You know, that's the brutal reality. You need as much money as you can, particularly in Scotland, to try and compete, you know, with clubs at a similar level, or, you know, for most of the top men's clubs here, it's to try and compete as best they can with the old firm, which they'll never be able to financially, but they kind of want to be the best of the rest because that comes with European places. So, you know, huge pressure always to bring in money, you know, financially. The men's game does do a lot of things in terms of supporting new communities. We've got a lot of, most of our major men's clubs up here have charities attached to them, you know, and they do great things in terms of particularly supporting perhaps, you know, men's health issues, because, you know, a whole load of guys still go to the football together. They possibly don't talk about things, but, you know, they might do within a football environment and open up a little bit more. So, you know, men's football has been really, really powerful in that. But as I say, it's different. It's been a very traditional way of how to do things and how the game's seen. And that's where I think for us as a club, you know, we have quite clear values. And I think, funnily enough, we just had a kind of board meeting about this yesterday, but it's just to always think about those values in every decision we make. And, you know, that sometimes is very much not the traditional way to do things. Because, you know, football can be quite harsh, but, you know, we try and say, well, if we're championing women and girls, then that's what we need to do, even though that decision may cost us a lot of money for no benefit. But if it's, for example, you know, to the advantage of the player, and player welfare for us is massive, you know, I think when I go down to why do we want players to play for us, we want players to play for our club because they feel it's a great environment to be in. And a lot of players say that, you know, when they come to Glasgow City, that they've travelled and played for so many teams all around the world and they've never been so well looked after. And that's really important to me because that's what we want. You know, we want women to feel championed. I mean, I'm amazed that a lot of players have come play for me and say, this is the first time I've been offered a pension. I mean, that's actually almost illegal to not offer someone a pension, you know, of a certain age. And it's small things, but we realise that in the women's game we've accepted things for so long, and then women were just so grateful to get paid to do anything. Then obviously we've got all the talk about maternity rights and everything now that's coming in. But, you know, as women, we have accepted anything just for being able to play a sport, which isn't right. You know, you should expect so much more.
Massively. I think obviously from myself sort of seeing, you know, being a part of the women's game and playing the women's game for, you know, a decade, the transition period has obviously been quite significant. And, you know, you have gone from pretty much just sort of, you know, hands out begging for, you know, food, resources, kit, playing time, playing space, to now be in a position where actually it's such a marketable and profitable product that you can kind of I suppose, more pick and choose where, you know, some of your investments or some of your sponsors or some of your partnerships are coming from. But, you know, you talked there about some amazing sort of principles and, you know, the culture that you're trying to create at Glasgow in terms of wanting to do the right things by your players, and especially for, you know, female players and the kind of, you know, specific issues that female players have. Where does that culture come from? Is that something that you sort of created at board level? Is that something that's come from the players? Is it a mix of both?
I think it's natural. These things have always been, football is a business. So, you know, Glasgow City is a business. And it's, you know, when Cass and I started the club, it was, you know, we wanted to be the best club out there we could be. We wanted to do things differently. We wanted the girls to have better opportunities. We wanted to create, you know, youth teams, because we weren't allowed to play, you know, football when we were kids. There was no opportunities, all that kind of stuff. And then just as the years kind of grow and you realise you're living these things, then, you know, probably it's probably the last decade where we've kind of sat back, and because it's difficult to sit back and reflect sometimes, you know, because there's two people that grew up running the club with full-time jobs. And for me, you know, for the first, 12 years, I was also playing, you know, so running a club, playing, also having a full-time job, you kind of just go like 100 miles an hour, and sometimes you don't sit back and think. And it has been, probably ironically, you know, we've built the club a lot better since I retired. You know, I've got a bit more time to obviously retire from playing, spend doing it, and now I'm very fortunate I'm full-time in what I do at the club. But it's just that natural evolution where, as a business, you grow. I, you know, grow as a person, started the club very young, and then you start to think back and you think, like, this is actually what we're about. And then, you know, we reflect and say, right, we've made all these decisions based on these pillars. And then you start to realise that everything fits into that. And that's naturally how you run your club, based on your own values. And then you just embed them, you grow them. Like most businesses, you talk about them a lot. You realise how they influence every decision you make. And, you know, they do just encompass, you know, what they are. And I think I'm going to tell you what they are. So for us, we're actually extremely demanding. And that demanding really high standards came from our success from a young age, because when we were, you know, very young as a club, everyone was completely amateur. In fact, you know, my entire 12 years of playing for Glasgow City, not only did I run it and play for it, I also paid £40 a month for the privilege of doing so in my monthly subs, you know, because this was the reality that we all lived in. But we trained like a professional team. You know, we trained four nights a week, and, you know, the players all had really good diets. And but you had to do that back in the day to be successful, you know. And then, you know, everything as well from, you know, we're leading, so we stand out, and if things aren't right, you know, we speak about it, we try and create change. And from a lot of that, we've also been really pioneering. We've, you know, we've most of the firsts in Scotland have been because we've done it. And whether that's been, you know, the first club to have a full-time head coach, first club to insist that head coach was pro-licensed, first club to pay a player, first club to, you know, qualify for the next stage of the Champions League. You know, all of these historical moments have been Glasgow City, and most of those periods of how we've got there has been because, you know, we've been demanding, we've been leading. But then also our last one is caring, and I go back to that, player welfare. We've done it with, you know, players' welfare at heart, and tried to do it in the right way so that players enjoy playing for us. And we are, you know, we are a family club, but we're not too cuddly, because you have to win, and, you know, there's standards, but you can combine it all, you know, combine it all quite well. So, as I say, it's just over, you know, building the business, reflecting, and then now it's the kind of values that we live by every day.
I think some of the stuff that you've touched on, that you've kind of challenged over the years, like, we often talk a lot about the success of women's football and how quickly it's grown, but we're seeing now that there's still a long way to go with national teams now demanding fairer treatment. You know, we're still talking about maternity rights in the women's game. So it's, you know, we're still in a position to shape it, if you like. And I guess clubs like yourself, and particularly independent clubs, which I guess are reducing at the moment, are almost creating a framework for how things should kind of go, it feels like, in terms of the core values that you have. And, you know, we've seen some of that in the likes of the NWSL with, like, Angel City. It feels like it's a similar thing where you're both quite involved in your community, and that's a core part of what you do as a football club. Do you feel like that could be a framework for future independent clubs, if you like, and could we see more of them?
I think 100% it has to be a framework, because if you're going to be independent, you know, it means you can run by your own values. And I'd like to think that most clubs, most businesses run by the correct values, because most successful businesses, you need to believe in what you're doing, and you kind of need to have a just cause Because if your motivation, for example, is just to make money, that's you're not going to be successful. You need to get up, feel the fire in your belly and want to do it every day and make a difference. So, you know, we're a football club that wants to make a difference. So 100%, if you're independent, you're not going to be influenced by, you know, your main peers in the club. Your hands aren't going to be tied by, for example, if they have a bad year and they get relegated and their income drops dramatically, which means your income drops dramatically. You know, all of these things which we've seen over the years, you know, teams, you know, collapse. Obviously, it happened to Eskilstuna and recently in Sweden. It's happened numerous times in England over the years. You would like to think we're far away from that happening again, but, you know, you just never know. You know, it very much could. And sadly, we know that it's the women that will probably suffer, because our biggest challenge just now in the women's game is still not really stand on its own two feet, you know, from a financial sustainability point of view. So that's, I think, you know, one of our biggest challenges as well. So we want to grow, and we want, you know, our women players to have, you know, similar wages and all the opportunities. It's balancing it with being able to balance the books as well.
No, I think it's going to be interesting. Obviously, we've got this Karen Carney review coming out at some point in the sort of indefinite near future, soon-ish. Yeah, at some point. I mean, obviously, she's got to gather mountains of information and put it all together in one fantastic report that I'm hoping is going to be very in-depth and insightful. But I think one of the models that I think she will be looking at is the sort of independent clubs. And we touched on there is sort of, I know Lewis isn't sort of a fully independent club as such, but it does have a kind of independent-ish model with a unique way of how it does things. And then London City Lionesses in the Championship as well. But obviously, you know, being an independent club comes with its challenges, not just sort of on a financial sphere. But I mean, we've just seen the big January transfer window, you know, we're talking hundreds of thousands of pounds now being paid for players. I mean, in terms of the sort of competitive advantage that being non-independent gives you in, you know, getting, you know, bigger names in, you know, bigger players, international players, you know, is there a sort of worry at all that you know, having that kind of financial capacity in terms of, you know, being able to get in players like that is something that, you know, Glasgow might struggle with in terms of the comparison then between sort of Celtic and Rangers?
Yeah, listen, I think it'll always be challenging, you know, for an independent club in that respect. But I think it's what do you stand for and what's important? You know, if it's to be, you know, attached to, you know, a men's club which is really all the history in the men's game. And, you know, if players are joining you for the men's history, they're not really joining you at this point in time for the women's history. And there's very few clubs. It kind of drives me crazy. There's so many players get, you know, signed, and they've got all the big pictures and the videos taken, and it's a big tour around the 60,000 seater stadium, of which, you know, for most female players, they'll be lucky if they play in once in their 3 years that they're at the club. So, you know, it's also not really quite often the reality for those players. You know, it looks great, but that's actually not where you're going to play, and that's also probably not where you're going to train either. So yes, it's challenging, and yes, you know, the shininess of the history and fame of the men's clubs makes it more challenging. But for me, I'm kind of looking for a player that has something different in them. You know, so as much as we want to sign talented players at Glasgow City, they need to fit our model and they need to fit our values. And, you know, if they're not all about that, then they're actually not going to fit into our club culture. So it's also the type of player we want. So yes, you know, would I love to sign Sam Kerr, take her off Chelsea? You know, yes, but it's not going to happen. But it doesn't bother me that it's not going to happen.
I'm going to shift it a little bit from the micro to the macro a little bit to looking at the SWPL, expanding obviously to 12 teams, and then 8 entered into the second tier, and then also brought under the jurisdiction of the SPFL, so the Scottish Professional League, which runs the men's game. What difference has that kind of made from your perspective?
The main difference is it has kind of given control back to the clubs. You know, before we were under Scottish Women's Football, who, you know, like the growth of most women's sport, you know, grew from a very small organisation, you know, running purely grassroots amateur football into an organisation that was running grassroots football for a six-year-old picking up the ball for the first time to teams with, you know, 16 senior internationalists trying to you know, playing the Champions League, and they just became too far apart for it really to work, and the model and structure of kind of power and authority didn't sit with the clubs at all. So that became challenging for us at the top end of the game, because, you know, we really needed the game to grow, mainly financially, to be honest, you know, broadcast deals, commercial deals, and it just wasn't really happening. And probably it was a frustration for the top clubs. And we looked at different models as to how we do it, and do we go off on our own? The SPFL showed interest, unsurprisingly, given the growth of the women's game. And, you know, we're keen that we go in under their umbrella. So I actually sit on the board for that. I was voted on as one of the club kind of members. And now, you know, as clubs, we have control. We have, you know, we have the majority of the board. We can make the decisions. We can shape them. And, you know, we've already made some big strides in terms of, you know, commercial deals and broadcast deals for the league, which ultimately, you know, will benefit the top 18 clubs.
I mean, obviously the league isn't fully professional yet. Is that something that you sort of see happening in the near future? Is that something you'd like to see happen very quickly?
Yeah, 100%. We were actually classed as a professional league by FIFA. So, you know, it's all the clubs that the SWPL2 is a class as professional, but SWPL1 or just SWPL as it's now called is. So yeah, there's no players now in our top league that isn't paid. Just it's all to different extents. You know, some are fully professional. So you know, ourselves, Celtic Rangers, Hibernian, you know, we're professional. Hearts, I'd probably say at least half to three quarters of them, you know, will be professional. Aberdeen are all part-time players. So there's Spartans, you know, are fully part-time. So there's a growth of more and more investment. And I think it will be easier because, as you've already discussed, most of those other clubs, you know, are attached to men's clubs. It's easier for them to make these decisions, to make the girls more full-time, as we can grow more income into the league. And that was one of, as I say, the main drivers for doing so, because, you know, we want to have a fully professional league in terms of all players being, you know, full-time players that take part in it.
I mean, it was a long time ago now. I always think when you talk about 2013, it was like last year, but it's not. And
2013?
Yeah, my sense of time is completely warped.
Jeez, that's like, ages ago. That's 10 years ago.
Doesn't feel like that long. Anyway, I mean, in 2013, you and the club reportedly held talks with the WSL about moving to a larger English top division because the women's football situation in Scotland was allegedly not moving quickly enough. How do you reflect on that now? Is that anything that you still think about or sort of, you know, wish that things would have been different at all?
Okay, of course. Listen, we would have loved that to have happened. I think we always knew deep down that it probably never would have, just because, you know, you'd have all the other English teams saying, well, how does that work? They're not part of the English FA. How do they sneak in? That's taken a place away from us. But yeah, it's in all aspects of Scottish football, we look to English football and say, God, I wish we were part of that, you know, because there's a lot more investment, a lot more growth. And obviously we could see at the very start of the WSL where it was going. And at that point, we, to be honest, were far too big for, you know, for Scottish football. And we wanted that competition. We wanted all the stuff I talk about now that we're slowly getting, you know, in terms of players wanting to play in our league, wanting to remain at our club because there's incredibly good competition and a really, really high standard.
Speaking of incredible competition.
Nice.
Thank you. playing Celtic on Sunday, right? Crunch
yes,
game?
Yes, aha, huge, huge game.
How much are you looking forward to that one? How's it going to go?
Oh, well, hopefully a Glasgow City win. I mean, we're obviously top of the league, so we've got, you know, it's maybe not, it's, you know, Celtic is probably, I think we're 3 points ahead, so they'll look at it as a game they really need to win. Obviously, it would be massive for us if we do win, because we'd go 6 points clear of them. But, you know, after that, we're going into the split. We have to play Celtic another twice, Rangers another twice. We've got a lot of other strong teams, particularly in Hearts and Hibernian, who will take points. Hearts have already done that off Rangers this year. Motherwell have already, you know, taken points as well off some of the, you know, the old firms. So I think Sunday's massive, but it won't be the defining point in the league, 100% no.
I mean, some really interesting, insightful stuff there. I think it's always fascinating when we sort of talk about, you know, independent clubs versus non-independent clubs. You know, being in the Championship myself for, you know, quite a long period of time, we've seen it. We've seen London City being one of the first. And now I think the club are doing, you know, amazing stuff in, you know, obviously paying their players, you know, pretty decent wages that I've heard, in around the sort of top 20s, if not early 30s per year. So, you know, that's great that we've kind of seen an example of what a club can do. But my biggest fear, I think, for a club like that is then stepping up into the WSL, because there is we're talking millions. We're going from, you know, maybe hundreds of thousands, top in a million or in excess of that. But then going into the WSL, the stadia that you need, the additional FA criteria, the regulations, the licensing, you know, you're talking multiple millions. And that's a big jump in investment. So for me, I do feel like there is still a bit of a gulf there, and that actually there's so much more sort of insecurity and financial risk.
I thought it was really interesting to hear the makeup of an independent club. I really like it. I like the fact that you can shape it, that you can create your own values, that you're not kind of relying on someone else to make decisions when maybe you're not their priority. Mm-hmm. So I really like that. And I think it's a great model. And it's something I'd like to see more of in the future. My take is that with the women's game growing so quickly, we're almost too impatient is the wrong word, because, you know, the game isn't getting what it deserves, right? So the growth and the fast growth is great, because we're getting closer and closer to what the game should have in terms of facilities and funding. But at the same time, it's almost too fast maybe for an independent model taking off kind of now-ish. I mean, Glasgow is slightly different because they've been around since 1998. They've kind of paved the way, which is fantastic. And we're seeing the same, as I said, over in the likes of Angel City, where you're getting these big investors investing big money. But you almost need the growth of the game in order for that independent side of things to become an interesting financial perspective, you know, that people could look at and say, this could be a really good investment. And it's like, it's hard to have one without the other. And I, you know, maybe I'm wrong. I'm not a very intellectual business person, but you kind of need that growth. And what we're seeing in women's football, and the you know, the big names and the big stars and the great tournaments and stuff, and it's visible, and we're seeing lots of money put into it, in order for then an independent club starting out to be a really interesting financial thing to get involved in. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like, without that investment and that growth, is that an interesting thing to fund? So it's like, you almost kind of need both. And maybe it's a case of, like, we have this, lots of non-independent teams attached to men's football clubs, mm-hmm. now. And maybe over time we will see, because at the moment we're seeing less independent clubs, right? Maybe over time, with this popularity and growth, we will start to see more independent clubs with the kind of framework that Glasgow has shown, or Angel City has shown. And we might see more of that, because it is a viable investment, and it is something that is making money.
It's interesting, I suppose, because the speed of the women's game is now, you know, it's picking up pace. It's been picking up pace for a few years now. It's almost like, in order to keep up with that pace, you need to have a big injection,
yeah,
very much up front in the first instance. And in order to do that, because the women's game, you know, even for Arsenal and Chelsea, isn't even that profitable,
yeah,
you kind of need the backing of big stars like Angel City. You know, they have A-list celebrity, they've got Hollywood superstars.
That's not a normal kind of situation,
that,
is it?
That doesn't just happen.
You know, will we have like Ricky Gervais and, like, I don't know, no, James Corden already has his money in Angel City, but
Ryan,
like,
Reynolds in Wrexham,
yeah,
we've got, you know, Stormzy with Murky FC, so yeah, maybe we'll get, like, I don't know, who's the biggest superstar?
Adele.
Yeah, we'll have Adele doing like Adele FC for the WSL title for next season. We'll wait and see. Adele, if you're listening to Upfront,
you're rolling in the deep of all the cash. Can you throw some towards a football club?
Thank you so much for joining us today on Upfront. Myself and Rach will be back next Tuesday. But if you have any questions for the show in the meantime, remember, you can tweet us at Football Ramble. I am at Morgie_89. And Rach is, of course, at Girls on the Ball. We will see you next week.
Upfront is a Stack production. And part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else.
Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from L.A. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.